I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, you don't see this very often. The head of the Seattle Public School District torching the teachers union as they plan to go on strike and delay the start of school. Plus, maybe not a shock anymore, but the Seattle Times once again spewing lies, this time about the initiative to restore parental rights. And Seattle's mayor survives a recall effort, but is that maybe a good thing? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandy Cruz. You just don't see this very often. You do not see in the Seattle Public School District or in very progressive cities, school superintendents telling the truth about the teachers' unions. You just don't see it. And I don't know for sure, but I'm starting to think that the new head of the Seattle Public School District might be a certified badass, because they're supposed to start school on Wednesday. And the teachers' union is using the leverage of a strike to try to get more money for its members. And you almost never, when these negotiations are going on and a strike has been voted on and threatened, you almost never hear anything from the school district. They kind of have the negotiations behind closed doors. But the new Seattle Public School superintendent, Ben Schuldiner, wasn't about to stay quiet as teachers threatened to strike, and as parents and as students in the district who are prepared to go back to school are left just hanging. So he put out, and this was sent to me by a parent, he put out a message to the Seattle Public School community. It's very long. It is brutal. It's hilarious at times even. And basically he calls out the Seattle Education Association on all its BS. So I want to read just a few parts of this. And keep in mind, this guy's only been on the job for 7 months. They started the process of hiring him in late 2025. He actually took up the position in February of 2026. So it's been 7 months. And he's already telling the teachers' union what's up. So he starts by explaining in this newsletter why he's saying something. He said, every now and then, the union has shared their opinions, once with a poop emoji. He says that. Every now and then, the union has shared their opinions, once with a poop emoji, about the district's proposals, which you are probably not supposed to do, but in general, most of the correspondence the union has sent out up until last week seems to have been fine. Many people have asked me why we, as a district, don't also share information about how things are going. Typically, school district lawyers are pretty conservative and generally advise against any communication to make sure that it doesn't cross the line of bargaining in public or direct dealing or any other problematic or bad faith action. However, as many folks know, by not addressing things in public, only one side is being heard from. I have negotiated many contracts in my time, and I have never responded publicly about any of them. But that is also because I have never had a union or association share so publicly as the Seattle Education Association does. That is certainly their prerogative. I would never tell a union how to negotiate, but the response is now he's going to share the school district side of the story, and it really makes the union look greedy, petty, like liars, and like they don't actually care about the kids. They just care about their bottom line. So the first thing he makes clear to parents is it didn't have to come down to this. We didn't have to be 2 days from the start of the school district with teachers threatening to go on strike, because 1 month after he took over as the head of the Seattle Public School District, they offered to negotiate with the teachers union in March of 2026, long before it would become a problem that would maybe force the district's hands with all this leverage the teachers now have. He says, on March 6th, the district asked to start bargaining. We were willing and ready to meet anytime, anywhere. However, the Seattle Education Association responded to our multiple entreaties with requests for data and did not commit to an actual meeting until June 25th. Almost 4 full months since we initially reached out. Gosh, wonder why that is. It's because the teachers' union knows that they have maximum leverage if they can make the negotiations butt up to the start of the school district. So they didn't want to do it in March. What kind of sucker starts negotiating in March? No, they wanted to be in the exact position that they are now in right now and that they are putting families in. And it's all a matter of greed. He also calls them out for misinformation and for making suggestions in their statements that, you know, they're not getting paid for all of the work they do, regardless of whether they're in the classroom or not. And he says that's simply not true. He says, I was a teacher many years ago. I love this guy. Look, maybe there's things he's done that I don't love. I'm not sure. But just from this, I love this guy. I was a teacher many years ago. I got paid for my time in the school. I got a salary for showing up to work and teaching the kids. Lesson planning, grading papers, and planning with my co-teachers after school was never part of what I got. Here in Seattle, our teachers get the equivalent of around 27 days of pay for all of these responsibilities. I have never seen anything like this outside of Washington State. I'm not saying the teachers don't deserve this. I'm only saying I wish I got this when I was a teacher. I also want to make clear that the community knows that this is already in their contract. So he's saying, oh, they say they don't get time for all this lesson planning, grading papers. He's like, no, that's already in their contract. And in fact, there aren't teachers' contracts like this that I've seen anywhere else in the country. It's very special to teachers in Washington State. They're getting something above and beyond what I got when I was a teacher and what other teachers across the country are getting. They're still lying about it and they're still complaining about it. He says, to put this in perspective, the salary line that the greatest number of teachers are in has a base wage of $118,716 for 180 days of work. Then they get around $3,200 for 5 extra contractual days, another $2,600 for 4 tech days, and then almost $18,000 for these TRI days. So some of the stuff that we talked about with the planning, et cetera. So 1,060 teachers in the Seattle Public School District alone have a base wage of $120,000. For 180 days of work. 180 days of work. They're some of the highest paid teachers in the nation. And they also get this extra pay for the contractual days, for tech days, and for days for lesson planning, grading, etc., above and beyond any teachers in the country. But it's still not enough for them. It's still not enough. All right, so he goes on to say at the end of this, so let me be absolutely clear. The Seattle Education Association does not have to strike, period, full stop. If they do, that is completely up to them. They have a contract that they signed and it will continue. The current contract they are working under remains in place. So they're not like going into the school year without a contract. We are not the NFL owners who lock out our players trying to exact concessions or givebacks. There is absolutely no reason to strike other than to flex power. No one is forcing the union to strike. It is certainly my hope to have a contract before the beginning of the school year, but more importantly, it is my hope that we have school on Wednesday. And at this point, that is solely up to the Seattle Education Association. I've never seen it called out like this in such great detail by a school superintendent. And with such candor, you know, saying that they're putting out communications to the public in response to the district's offers that have poop emojis. And they want to be taken seriously at the bargaining table and in the court of public opinion. But, you know, what he says there at the end, I mean, it really does underscore what the issue is. It's to flex power. The teachers' unions are the most powerful entity in the state, and they have that amount of power because Democrats have given it to them. They are that powerful because Democrats in the majority with one-party rule have given it to them. Up to and including pay for striking workers, pay for striking teachers, if they can meet some minimal standards. So that just gave them even more leverage. And we said from the beginning, as did most people with half a brain cell, that giving striking workers pay would, gosh, I don't know, lead to a whole hell of a lot more strikes. And that the very first opportunity they got, the Seattle Education Association would use it to keep kids out of school to try to pad their own pockets. And I'm not saying every single teacher is just cares about padding their own pockets, right? But I think the vote on this was like 70-something percent to go on strike. So a majority of the Seattle Education Association members want to go on strike. Did they know that the school district had reached out to their union way back in March to try to get this process started so it didn't come to this? The other thing I'll say, you know, when they're out, oh, this is for the kids. It's always for the kids, right? It's always for the kids. Interesting. Because the Seattle Education Association, if it cares so much about the kids, they still refuse to comment on the fact that their brand new president of the Seattle Teachers Union is credibly accused of abusing students in the classroom. Here's a report from Fox 13.
Last month, Fox 13 reported on a Seattle Public Schools investigation into special education teacher Ibi Iduwu. The investigation found it was more likely than not that she grabbed an 8-year-old student hard enough to cause bruising, threw a marker at him, and threw books at other students. That 8-year-old is autistic and has a speech delay.
Do you still support your current president, Ibi Iduwu?
I realize that some serious concerns from members in our community at large. But for me, myself, as a bargain team member, my task right now is to work with the district to get this contract finished so we can start the school year on time.
I have been steeped in this bargain.
How convenient.
All summer long. So that is really where my focus has been.
So there's no talk about her possibly resigning or even the teachers union asking for her to resign at this point.
I am not aware of any official movement.
They care about the kids, though. They care about the kids, but the president of their union is accused of throwing books at kids, screaming at them until they cried, and then telling them that she didn't care about their tears, allegedly causing bruising on a child who was special needs. And she's still the president of the Seattle Education Association. She's out there messaging. She's their messenger on why they deserve more money and how it's for the kids. And the union members out there, good for Fox 13. Because they're probably used to the media being so friendly to them and all this stuff. And that Fox 13 reporter goes, yeah, what about your what about the teachers union president? If you care about the kids so much, shouldn't you ask her to resign? Oh, I don't know. We've been really busy in bargaining all summer. I've been steeped in bargaining. I couldn't possibly offer an opinion on whether somebody who is credibly accused of abusing students in the classroom should be asked to resign as the head of the teachers union. I mean, the emperor has no clothes. It's absolutely insane. And good for this school superintendent. He gets a little round of applause for just calling it what it is and laying this all out for the public to see. So I, too, hope that Seattle Public School students will be back in classes on Wednesday. And I hope at this point that the school district doesn't give an inch. All right, coming up next, the Seattle Times at it again, lying, 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 lying. We'll discuss first, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto, and tech. It's also important to make sure your money manager is focused on what's happening in energy right now, because energy touches every impact or every aspect of the economy. So reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. He can give you a free portfolio review. It's just a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Doesn't cost a thing. I think it's a really good idea. You can get a Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk portfolio review, where they'll talk to you about opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. And they'll kind of go over how they strategize, et cetera, how they're different from other money managers. Doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get your market updates every day directly from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast. All right. Do I have a vendetta against the Seattle Times? Maybe a little bit. You know, it's been a while since we actually did an edition of The Seattle Times is Trash. I hadn't planned on it, but can we do that? The Seattle Times is straight trash. Apparently no graphic. That's okay. It's been a while since we did it. It's totally hidden. I don't know why. All right. So the Seattle Times came out with endorsements on the initiative. So they're starting to do the interview processes with whether they're going to support or oppose the three Let's Go Washington initiatives. I can tell you before I even get into this, I know exactly what they're going to do. And I've known this for months. They're going to take the no side on the two initiatives around like sort of social ideological issues. I guarantee they're And I think I said this on the show a couple months ago. No on the initiative to protect girls' sports. They're going to be no, and they are no, on the initiative to restore parental rights. And then I think that they'll say yes on the initiative to stop the income tax and try to keep this perception that they're like pro-business or whatever it is. But they'll do it by throwing girls and parents, you know, to the mob, right? So sure enough, the Times comes out with its first anti-endorsement. Seattle Times endorsements in the WA 2026 general election, no on initiative 001, parents' rights. Gosh, I can't wait to read the reasoning why the Seattle Times doesn't want you to know what's happening with your children at school. I bet it's full of lies. It is. Voter initiatives are generally spurred by lightning rod issues. What's perplexing about Initiative 001, the so-called parental rights initiative on ballots this November, is that it lays out rights that are, in the main, already standard. Tucked into the legalistic language, 12 paragraphs down, is the real driver behind this effort: access to student mental health records. If the initiative passes, those documents could be released to parents. Currently, they are shielded. Yeah, that's the point. They're putting that in there like it's a deep, dark secret and like it's something scandalous. No, yeah, we want parents to have their child's mental health records. What are you talking about? It says, so if a student discusses gender confusion with a school counselor because they're afraid of the reaction at home, parents could get that information. Yeah, we want them to. Supporters of the initiative suggest that educators are hiding instances when youths may, for example, use different pronouns while at school. They imply that schools could spirit children off to medical facilities to change genders without letting parents know. Yeah, we're not implying that. We're saying that. That is what's happening. That schools are directed. And can you go back to that for a second? Because they contradict themselves in just one paragraph apart. When they say that this is about exposing kids' mental health records that could now be released to parents if this initiative passes, currently they are shielded. So they say if a student discusses gender confusion with the school counselor because they're afraid of the reaction at home, parents could get that information. So they're in that line admitting that right now that information is hitting. And then they say supporters of the initiative suggest educators are hiding instances when youths may, for example, use different pronouns while at school. Right. Yes, that's exactly what's happening. They imply that schools could spirit children off to medical facilities to get gender changes without letting parents know. Have they never, like, been outside the doors of their own newsroom? Because we and others have done stories on exactly that happening. We're not implying it. We're telling it to you with facts and real stories, like the story of Eleanor Holman, who's now been missing since November of 2025. Used to be a Puyallup school student. Family moved to Texas. She ran away from Texas back to Washington State, where in Washington State, the state by law, because of Senate Bill 5599, can hide your child's location from you if they are gender confused. And in this case, Eleanor wanted to be Elliot. And how was Eleanor convinced that she wanted to be Elliot? It started in the freaking Puyallup school district, where she what? Saw a counselor, where she talked to the counselor about her gender confusion. The counselor connected her to Oasis Youth Center, where queer youth thrive, is their slogan. Oasis Youth Center connected her to Team Child, which gave her a free attorney to be able to try to separate herself from her parents, who had never expressed any sort of concern or anything or knowledge of the fact that Eleanor wanted to be Elliot. It was all hidden from them. Democrats in the state of Washington think that's a good thing. But now we don't know if Eleanor's dead or alive because she's been missing since November of 2025 and her parents have no clue where she is. At one point, she was hanging around homeless people in Olympia. Is that a better result for the safety of that child? To be hanging around with homeless people in Olympia? With people not knowing if she's dead or alive? I don't think so. One of the many, many reasons I'm voting yes on the initiative to restore parental rights. Because no parent should have anything, really, and anything certainly of significance about their child's mental health kept from them by a school district that works for us, that's paid by us. That's the concept behind Initiative 001. That's why sane people are voting yes. And the audacity of the Seattle Times, or the stupidity of the Times, do you think that people don't have Google? And maybe they're just counting on, oh, Seattle Times readers definitely don't listen to Brandi Cruz's show, so they won't know about stories like Eleanor Holman's, which, by the way, is not the only story there is. There's lawsuits about this, of kids being disappeared from their families in the name of gender ideology. And for them to say, We're implying that schools could spirit children off to medical facilities without letting parents know. They literally did it to Eleanor Holman. They gave her a list of gender clinics and allowed her to go there during the school day, unbeknownst to parents. The Seattle Times lies so brazenly, or is it because they've created this little thought bubble for themselves where they think that they are so self-righteous and so much smarter than everyone, they don't need to go anywhere else for information or hear anyone else's position? The lies continue. It says it's an effort by the citizen group Let's Go Washington to repeal and replace parts of the state's current parent rights and student privacy bill, HB 1296, which was sponsored by State Rep. Monica Stonier, a Democrat from Vancouver, and passed last year. Under that law, parents must immediately be notified by schools the moment an alleged crime against their child has been reported. Wait a freaking second. So in here, the Seattle Times is lauding a Democrat-backed effort to pass a parental rights and student privacy bill, H. Bill 1296, which passed last year. Do you remember why 1296 was introduced? 1296 was introduced to overturn the previous Parental Bill of Rights initiative from Let's Go Washington, to water it down. They conveniently don't mention that Democrats and Republicans passed in 2024 the Let's Go Washington Parental Rights Initiative into law, almost unanimously. And then they came back a year later and they used HB 1296 to gut it and to roll some of those protections back. And now the Seattle Times is holding that up as, we don't need a parental bill of rights. The Democrats already passed one. Yeah, they passed one to undo the previous initiative. And the audacity of the Seattle Times, under that law, parents must immediately be notified by schools the moment an alleged crime against their child has been reported. So they're like, wow, they already have in HB 1296 this strong language that says you must immediately notify parents if a crime has occurred involving their child. Why is that language in there? It's because Republicans like State Representative Travis Couture forced them to put that language into 1296.
The underlying bill essentially states that schools can wait 48 hours before they tell parents if their children were involved in any kind of criminal action or if there was any sexual misconduct of staff. We have seen a stunning amount of sexual misconduct and sexual assaults by educators in our schools just in the last year itself, including two principals in a Vancouver school district that hid from parents a rape, a statutory rape of a 16-year-old female student in their school by one of their staff. Now, as a parent myself, I would be disgusted and sickened to know if my kids had some kind of sexual abuse put upon them by staff, and I wasn't notified immediately of those things. Now, this happened actually in my kid's school district, where an eighth grade school teacher was grooming and having inappropriate sexual relationships with eighth grade boys. This is all too much commonplace, and parents deserve to know right away whenever there is any kind of criminal activity or sexual abuse or sexual allegations of staff that goes along with the safety of their children. For God's sake, please vote yes.
And guess what? The Democrats voted no. The Democrats voted that down. And that clip went viral, and it was so embarrassing that Democrats in Washington State voted down a provision that would say if your child was potentially the victim of sexual assault, that the parents would have to be notified immediately, that Democrats went back to Republicans and they begged them to reintroduce that amendment so they could vote yes on it. So that's the only reason that House Bill 1296, which the Seattle Times is giving Democrats credit for, that's the only reason that it includes the provision that parents must immediately be notified is because that amendment from Republican State Representative Travis Couture. that they forced them to finally vote yes on because the public was so outraged. And keep in mind, 1296 wouldn't even have been necessary. It wasn't necessary had they not wanted to unwind the previous parental bill of rights. The Seattle Times goes on to say about the initiative. It's poorly written. It's not tailored for Washington. Like, what does that even mean? It's not tailored for Washington. And could expose already vulnerable kids to harm in instances where they are victims of abuse at home. Child abuse is already against the law that has nothing to do with the Parental Bill of Rights. There are already laws against child abuse. And it's a very different thing to say you're abusing your child versus, oh, you have questions and concerns if your child wants to identify as a different gender. It says the question at the heart of the matter is student safety. Domestic violence experts say the initiative could make it harder for a child to reach a safe adult. For that reason, we urge voters to turn it down. What are you even talking about? The question at the heart of the matter is student safety? How safe is Eleanor Holman? Seattle Times, you tell me if she's dead or alive. Is she safer living on the streets of Olympia and hanging around homeless people than she is in her loving home that never once expressed any sort of concern or knowledge that she wanted to be called Elliot? And this whole idea that the question at the heart of the matter is student safety, that sentence in and of itself, it shows the problem. The Seattle Times, the state, the schools, they believe that they care more about the safety of students than those students' own parents do. And I'm not saying there's not some bad parents here or there, but you don't make laws to govern a few bad apples. And that's in essence what they have done. They treat every parent like a bad person. They treat every parent like a danger to their child. And they treat every parent as fundamentally unfit to know what's happening with their children and their child's mental health. And I just dissent, as do most sane people. As did, by the way, Democrats in the state legislature when they passed the original Parental Bill of Rights almost unanimously in 2024. Wasn't so bad then, but now all of a sudden it's so horrible the Seattle Times must oppose it because parents cannot be trusted to keep their kids safe. Parents cannot be trusted to know what's going on with their kids at school. It's outrageous. Seattle Times is in this absolute thought bubble, which I'll continue with. So there's some controversy right now over language in the voter pamphlet that's going to hit mailboxes, I would imagine, fairly soon, over another Let's Go Washington initiative. This is Initiative 638, which is the initiative to protect girls' sports. So, of course, in the voter pamphlet, there's an argument for and against. Then each side gets a rebuttal to the other side's argument. And then it says who it's written by. And this is actually a fairly formal process when it comes to the initiatives. You sort of nominate people who you want to be able to write it, and they go in and write it. Now, keep in mind, and this has always been true, and I actually agree with this very much, that the state of Washington does not fact-check voter pamphlets. They don't fact-check candidate statements. They don't fact-check statements for and against initiatives. And I know that can be kind of frustrating because then you could put anything in there. And there have been instances of candidates embellishing their record, embellishing their experience. But ultimately, it can't be the job of the government. It cannot be the job of the government to fact-check. Because then the government, which in Washington state is run entirely by Democrats, I imagine, would fact-check the Republican side a little more stringently than they would fact-check the Democratic side. There'd always be these accusations, right? So it's really supposed to be up to the press and up to the public. And the media just doesn't do this enough, but we should be in the middle of making sure that the voter pamphlet statements are accurate. And if they're not, telling the public that there are lies in their voter statement. So if we look at the argument for Initiative 638 as written in the voter pamphlet, I want to just read a highlighted section. It says, voting yes gives all students the opportunity to participate in interscholastic sports. Medical clearance is already required to participate safely. Students would compete in the category that aligns with their sex, verified during routine, medically necessary primary care recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics. During a private, consented visit, a licensed medical professional would verify sex based on the student's birth records, medical history, and or a standard non-invasive physical examination. So this gets at the heart of the biggest lie told about the initiative to protect girls' sports, that if you pass it, there'll be invasive genital exams, and every female athlete will be, you know, required at any moment just to undress in front of any adult that demands it, which is obviously just crazy. And so this was included in the voters' pamphlet as a way to say, no, this is standard care. And in fact, it's the care that's already recommended by the American Academy for Pediatrics. Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics is not too happy, apparently, that it is being named in, or, you know, that it's being referenced in the voter pamphlet on the for side, for protecting girls' sports. So you might have seen this article in the Seattle Times. Despite objections, doctors' group cited in Washington Voter Guide on trans sports ban. So it says the initiative campaign seeking to bar trans students from girls' sports. Okay, first of all, there's a lie in the first sentence. It does not seek to ban trans students from girls' sports. Good God, how many times do we have to fact check that? You can be trans. You would just have to be a trans male. So you just have to be a biological girl. But you can identify as trans and still participate as long as you're a biological girl. But I digress. The initiative campaign seeking to bar trans students from girls' sports in Washington says it will not comply with a request from the American Academy of Pediatrics to remove mention of the medical group from its entry in the state voters pamphlet. In the voter guide, which appears online and is mailed out to each election season, Let's Go Washington, the sponsor of Initiative 638, cites the National Pediatric Association when referencing recommended annual checkups for children. Initiative proponents say there's nothing untrue about the language, but opponents argue the mention lacks context and will confuse voters. Either way, there's not much the state can do. So basically, both sides submit their write-ups for the voter pamphlet. Somehow, the American Academy of Pediatrics becomes wise that Let's Go Washington has referenced them in their write-up. I imagine the No Hate in Washington State people saw it and then called their friends, their woke pediatrician friends, and said, you should complain about this and try to get that reference removed, because they thought this will be really damaging to the No campaign, right? So the AAP did, reached out, told the committee it didn't want to be referenced. But committee members decided against making the change, said Hallie Herzberg, a spokesperson for Let's Go Washington. The passage in dispute, written by initiative supporters, reads, and I'll read it again for you, students would compete in the category that aligns with their sex, verified during routine medically necessary primary care, recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Herzberg said there's nothing inaccurate with what we said, so ultimately we just decided to leave it. And that is the case. When you look at recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics, annual well exams are normal. They're recommended. And you add that to every other year sports physical that you're required, your doctor knows what your gender is. It's as simple as that. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics, in this back and forth, which I've read the emails, never says that it's inaccurate what Let's Go Washington is saying. They never say that. They just say, we don't want to be referenced. We don't want to be referenced at all. And that's not really up to them. They have their guidelines out there for pediatric care. They're on the internet. So Let's Go Washington said, well, we can read the internet and we're going to take that and we're going to put it in our voter statement. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The voters pamphlet team at the Secretary of State's office reached out to Let's Go Washington and the group of individuals who worked together to write the statement. And they said, hey, AAP wants this removed. It says, we appreciate your working in good faith. We will extend to 8 a.m. tomorrow. Even better, if you're able to submit before 5 p.m. today, we're on the eve of printing and we'll, you know, get it in. Our expectation is that you will remove the AAP reference and revise the sentence minimally. Our expectation is that you will remove the AAP reference and revise the sentence minimally. And it was interesting that the Secretary of State's office was sort of trying to help facilitate a change to the voter pamphlet writing, because as you know, they don't get involved in this kind of thing. They don't fact check claims. In fact, Let's Go Washington provided this other email that was about the initiative to repeal the unconstitutional income tax, where you have State Senator Chris Gildon, who had emailed the voters pamphlet team at the Secretary of State's office and complained about the fact that, hey, the side that's opposed to the initiative to repeal the income tax is just lying in their rebuttal statement. Are they allowed to just literally put a lie in their rebuttal statement? And the voters pamphlet team responded and said, Senator Gildon, thank you for your feedback. We do not verify arguments for truth or fact, nor is any new material accepted. So basically, there's nothing we can do about it. So it seems upon reading that, that the Secretary of State's office even is handling these things differently. Like, no, we don't fact check. You submit it, whatever it is. But then in this email, it appears that they are requesting Let's Go Washington to remove the reference to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Now, I'll have a statement from the Secretary of State's office in a moment, but one of the people who helped to write this voter pamphlet statement is Alicia Perkins. You'll know Alicia. She runs a Substack called OSD Rescue. She has really been at the forefront of fighting for parental rights, and she's at the baseline. She's a mom. She's a mom in Washington State who wants parental rights, lives in the Olympia School District, has been very concerned about some of this stuff that's been going on there. We did an interview with her this morning, and she told us she felt intimidated and bullied by the Secretary of State's office and the American Academy of Pediatrics to change a factual statement for the voter pamphlet. When did you find out that the Academy of Pediatrics didn't want to be mentioned in your write-up and that the Secretary of State's office was asking for it to be removed?
The late afternoon of August 25th, I received a phone call from the Secretary of State making sure that I was aware that an email was sent to me regarding AAP. Now, mind you, this is weeks after the final submission of all these statements, that the AAP was requesting that reference to them in our statement was removed. And at that point in time on the phone call, I was out of state. I was not expecting this phone call. I didn't have access to email. And I said, are you saying that we're mandated to remove this? And I kind of received a non-answer. And he said, he said, if it's not, there could be some sort of legal ramifications in essence. And wow. I said, against me, against the committee, and received kind of a non-answer again. So it was kind of ambiguous, which was a little bit frightening, you know, as a private citizen who's just done this as a volunteer. And went and read the email, and it was a email from a representative for AAP in Washington. And she, this individual had already been quoted in other articles that was in opposition to the initiative. And they were requesting that we remove reference to AAP in our statement. Now, what we, when we referred to AAP in our statements, it was in reference to Bright Future Guidelines, which is the guidelines for examinations of infants, adolescents, children. And it was not in reference to them supporting the initiative or approving the initiative, anything like that. It was just in reference to publicly available information that the, any voter could look up.
Yeah.
And so that was the request at that point.
Did you feel a lot of pressure from the Secretary of State's office to change the language?
Well, not only did I feel pressure, but they put in writing. They literally said, our expectation is that you will remove AAP from the statement minimally. Wow. So at that point, I really didn't know what the rules were. And I, you know, really wanted to seek the advice of attorneys on this. And it does turn out that we were in no obligation at all to remove it. But we did entertain this request in good faith. I spoke with one of our committee members quite a bit over the next 24 hours, who is a practicing pediatrician. We went through what we said. We went through Bright Future Guidelines and really ended up feeling like even more confident in our statement.
Yeah. And you were mentioning to me before we started taping that you guys were entertaining possibly changing it, but there was one thing that happened really late at night that was the really nail in the coffin of you doing that, where you decided, hell no, we're not changing it. What was that?
At about 10 p.m. on the evening before, I was supposed to submit what we were going to do to the Secretary of State. Let's Go Washington, the director for Let's Go Washington, received a request from the Seattle Times for comment on the committee changing their statement. And that had not been done, that there was never anything submitted. We were simply in talks about it for about 24 hours at that point. So it became very clear at that point that someone in a very small group of people who would have known about this had gone to the Seattle Times, and that this was, in my opinion, intended to make it look like we were being forced to change something that was incorrect, or a hit piece or something like that. And that's when I realized, oh, this really wasn't a in good faith request. No. This is about intimidating us into changing something that honestly is one of the most important points in the statement.
Wow. Yeah. And I have my suspicions of who it is. I won't make you say it, but I think it was probably Heather Weiner with Powerhouse Strategic, who seems to have a direct connection to the Seattle Times on all sorts of stories. And they're running the No Hate in Washington State campaign. So that is my strong suspicion, but I sure hope it wasn't the Secretary of State's office. I've seen them usually as pretty fair arbitrators, which is why I'm surprised at the amount of pressure that they were exerting on you to change this. But Alicia Perkins, I'm glad you stood your ground. We'll see what happens from here, but I'm glad that that line will be in the voter pamphlet. Yeah. 10 p.m. Oh, Seattle Times. Can we get comment on this? What do you mean? It's not even public yet. We're still negotiating. We're deciding whether we're going to take it down. Somebody just runs. Oh, over to the Seattle Times. Please help us with this, because it's about a public pressure campaign. Everything the other side does is about manipulating public opinion. And hell, you know, maybe Let's Go Washington ought to be better at manipulating public opinion as well. Because right now, I mean, I think they're being outmaneuvered in that regard. But we did get a response from the Secretary of State's office. And I will say, maybe, I mean, here's the reality. I think the Secretary of State's office have been fair arbitrators on the initiative issues. You know, they fought against the bills that would have made it more difficult for signature gatherers to do their jobs. They were very quick and professional and efficient at getting all the initiatives certified. So I haven't seen any like real disdain from the office towards the initiative process, which makes me want to give them the benefit of the doubt. So on that email, when they wrote to Let's Go Washington, our expectation is that you will remove the AAP reference and revise the sentence minimally, and minimally is in italics. So here's what they said to us. They said the voter pamphlet team did not instruct the committee to alter their message. This was an instruction to limit the scope of the edit, and in response to a direct question from the campaign as to what they were allowed to modify. If the committee chose to edit their statement, it would only be to remove the reference to the AAP. The committee chose not to edit the statement, and the AAP reference remains in their pro statement. So what they're saying is that the response there is sort of out of context. If what they're saying is true, I think they should have written it better. And they're basically saying that you're only allowed to minimally edit the statement just to remove that narrow AAP reference, and you can't edit or remove anything else because those are sort of the rules. So they're saying we're just explaining the rules to them and how you can edit it at this late juncture, not actually demanding that you remove the AAP reference and that's it. So our expectation is that you will remove the AAP reference and revise the sentence minimally. So I can buy that. I can buy that. I think it should have been worded a little more clear for sure. But the AAP should be ashamed of itself, really, holistically in the greater context. They know that it's regular for kids to have these routine well exams. They know that their doctor, you know, knows what their gender is. They just don't want to be involved in this debate because they're so loony lefty. And so they don't even want to be referenced, even in a factual manner, in a voter pamphlet to help voters discern truth from fiction. All right, really quick on the initiative front as well. I've just got to point this out because we broke this story when it happened. Remember the guy, Ben Brown, who assaulted a signature gatherer for Let's Go Washington and then stole the pages of signatures and left, and it was all captured on video. And it was dramatic. He was arrested for like second degree robbery because he used force essentially to steal something from somebody. And by the way, I don't think that those initiative pages have ever been recovered. And so initially he gets charged with robbery in the second degree. Well, he has now pled guilty to a reduced set of charges. According to prosecutors, He pled guilty to one count, corrupt practices involving initiative referendum petitions. So that's what they refer. That's what that like statute is, corrupt practices. So he interfered with the initiative process. And one count of assault in the fourth degree. He was sentenced to 80 hours of community service, fined $650, has to take anger management courses, and will be under court supervision for 2 years. So he essentially got a suspended sentence in favor of community service and will not be convicted of felony second degree robbery. And look, I kind of said at the time, right, that I felt like robbery in the second degree probably would not be what prosecutors move forward with. You always charge high and then you go low. And in this case, it didn't seem like he had any sort of significant criminal history that was listed, at least. And so I do think that they should have kept the theft charge in, which they also ultimately dismissed, because he did steal those signatures. And that's as good as stealing ballots. So he will have this on his record. I think that's a good thing. Maybe a little too light. I don't know. 80 hours community service, $650 fine. Why is it always anger management classes? It's always anger. The chick who hit me down at the ICE facility, anger management classes. The chick who threatened to come to my home to harm me, anger management classes. It's like, I don't know that these people are acting out of anger more than maybe ideology, for instance. So just wanted to close the loop on that one. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, a new article out from Matt Calkins, the guy who recently quit the Seattle Times. And it talks about a new category in an AP writing contest that just shows how out of touch the media is. First, if you're looking to save some money, do what so many Undivided viewers and listeners have done. Take the First Mark challenge. Tara says, I switched my homeowners to First Mark and I saved $1,600 a year and I have far better coverage. She said far better, all caps, far better. So better insurance and she's saving $1,600 a year. I mean, what are you waiting for to take the First Mark challenge? First Mark compares rates and coverage from dozens of top rated carriers. Then they go out, they do the work to find the right coverage at the lowest possible price for your family. And when you need them, you pick up the phone and you talk to a real person right here in Washington State who knows you and is there to help. That's the kind of world-class service that has kept Mike and I with First Mark year after year. Seriously, wouldn't you like to know if you could be paying less for your insurance? Take the First Mark challenge today. It costs you nothing. There's no obligation, and you'll find out just how much money you could be saving every single month. You might also find out other things, like you're paying for insurance you don't need or that you're underinsured. First Mark doesn't want you to get crappy insurance just to save a buck. They want to make sure that your hard-earned assets are properly protected. So firstmarkinsurance.com, what are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, as you know, Matt Calkins quit his job at the Seattle Times as a longtime sports columnist because they refused to print a column he wrote, basically saying, let's stop calling girls who want to have fair play and fair competition and don't want to compete against boys, let's stop calling them transphobes. Seattle Times spiked it. He said, I've had enough. I'm quitting. So he's now writing on Substack. And his second article was a banger. I laughed quite a bit at it because it just shows the absurdity of the media and how the media has created this crazy little bubble for itself where it's not looking out for the interests of the public. It is in this ideological capture of a newsroom. And they think that they are just smarter and more, they're so much more self-righteous, certainly, than anyone else. So here's the headlines, again, from the Matt Calkins Substack. The AP's writing contest has a new category, excellence in transgender sports coverage, okay? He says, scrolling through X last week, I saw that the Associated Press sports editors added a new category to their annual writing contest. In addition to column writing, feature writing, breaking news, beat writing, sports journalists will now have a chance to win an award for excellence in transgender sports coverage. But he didn't judge it right away. He said, perhaps at first glance, it looked like their attempt to honor those who best tackle what might be the most polarizing issue in sports, a chance to recognize nuance and insight from every side of the debate. So he didn't immediately hate it. He thought, well, okay, I mean, the trans issue in sports is a huge storyline right now. So maybe they just want to recognize people who are able to cover that issue well and in a nuanced way and tackle both sides or some interesting storyline. And then he read the text of the speech that AP sports editor Vice President Eric Hall gave. So he was introducing the new category, right? for this upcoming Writers Awards show. And I just have to read the full text to you. So this is the sports editor for, he's the vice president for AP Sports Editors. And keep in mind, the Associated Press is, you know, it feeds stories to news outlets across the world. So AP should have standards above and beyond really any newsroom, because their work touches so many newsrooms and newspapers across the entire world. And this is one of the guys who's sort of like at the head of sports editors for the Associated Press. This is what he said about this new category, okay? Buckle up. Our job now is not to reduce transgender athletes to a court case, a statute, or a culture war talking point. Our job is to report what happens next, to tell the stories of the girls and women who lose not only a place on a roster, but a routine, a coach, a locker room, a bus ride, a circle of friends, and a sense of belonging. So if you read that much, it sounds like he is going to tell the stories of women and girls who've had opportunities stolen from him. Oh no. When he says women and girls, he's talking about boys. It says, we need to ask what exclusion costs, to follow where they go, to show what they grieve, what they build, and how they endure. Because when a young person is told she can no longer play the sport she loves with her friends, the story does not end at the courthouse. That is where our reporting begins. And next year, that reporting will have a place in our writing contest. I'm proud to announce that next year's contest will include a new category recognizing excellence in the coverage of transgender communities in sports. We will provide the full details this fall. He said this category is not about asking journalists to arrive at a predetermined conclusion. It is about asking us to do what great journalism has always done: report rigorously, listen closely, reject caricature, and make visible the people whom public debate too often turns into abstractions. We are journalists. Words matter. Accuracy matters. Humanity matters. So let us be clear. Transgender boys are boys. Transgender men are men. Transgender girls are girls. Transgender women are women. Their lives are not a sidebar. Their stories are sports stories. And I cannot wait to see the extraordinary journalism the people in this room produce as we tell those stories with rigor, courage, and the humanity they deserve. You guys, he literally, in a sentence, said, we're journalists, words and accuracy matter. And then he went on to say something that is not accurate and that is not factual. Transgender men are men. Transgender girls are girls. No, they're not. They're boys. Transgender men aren't men. They're women. And he wants us to take seriously their journalism. And just going back to like the first line, where he's like, we need to tell the stories of girls who lose a place on the roster, a routine, a coach, a locker room. And I'm thinking he's talking about real girls. And I'm like, amen, AP. Thank you for standing up for the girls. No, he was talking about boys and how we need to tell their stories when they get kicked off a team because they're trans. No, they get kicked off because they're a boy. These are journalists for the Associated Press. It's absolutely insane. And so, you know, Matt Culkins points out in his Substack, look, this is an 80-20 issue, but the 20's intimidation factor is Tyson-esque. And it often feels like that 20 makes up 90% of modern-day newsroom employees. Most editors simply don't want the smoke. So then he gives an example from his Seattle Times days, which had me rolling. He said 5 years ago, then Seattle Times columnist Larry Stone, the world's most likable man, penned a beautiful profile on then Mariners manager Scott Servais. The main interview took place in Servais' hometown of Coon Valley, Wisconsin, named after raccoons. So apparently they have a big raccoon problem in Coon Valley, Wisconsin, which Stone appropriately used as the dateline. So that's the thing at the top, like, oh, this is in Coon Valley, Wisconsin, and mentioned several times throughout the story. For 3 days, praise for Larry's feature poured in via social media and the comment section without a single complaint. But then an ex-Seattle Times employee took to Facebook to gripe that using coon in a story was harmful language, regardless of its meaning. The Times' social justice columnist flagged it, and later that day, the following editor's note sat atop Stone's piece. This story has been updated to minimize references to Scott Cervace's hometown, which is named after the large number of raccoons in the area, but also used as a racial slur aimed at black people. The repeated use of the town name, without explanation, did not meet our standards. We apologize. They literally, and I don't remember that story, but he writes this great column on Scott Cervace, goes to his hometown of Coon Valley, Wisconsin, uses the name of the hometown that he's in, doing the story with Scott Cervace, something that shaped, you know, who he would become. And some ex-employee at the Seattle Times gets mad that Coon Valley has the word coon in it. And they say we shouldn't be using it in a story because it's offensive, because lowercase coon is a reference to black people. So we can't say a real life name of a town that was named for that because there's a bunch of raccoons in the area. So that's just such a great example of this kind of, like, 2% of people might have a problem with that. But oh my gosh, God forbid anything involving race comes into the picture. Then they have to attach this stupid editor's note to an otherwise wonderful, wonderfully written column. And it's the same thing in the girls' sports debate, where the AP sports editors are taking the position that facts and accuracy means, it must mean, that we refer to boys as girls if they say they're girls. And the Pew Research on this is clear, and I'll just reference it because I always talk about, you know, this like an 80-20 issue. The Pew Research Center did a study of Americans at the end of 2025, and they're nonpartisan. They are, you know, pretty well regarded when it comes to this stuff. The headline, most Americans, regardless of their gender, race, or age, say they're uncomfortable with trans athletes playing on teams that don't match their sex at birth. So it doesn't matter if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a man, a woman, white, Hispanic, black, Asian, in your 20s, in your 30s, in your 50s, or in your 60s or older. Americans don't think boys should be competing against girls. It makes them uncomfortable. All of those categories I mentioned fall basically within the 70 to 80 percentile of Americans. And even among the LGBTQ plus community, only 45% say they're very comfortable with boys playing against girls. So even if you splice out the community of people that we would be led to believe is the most likely to think that boys can just become girls, there's only 45% strong support for the idea of us adopting that fallacy as a reality. Yet you have newsrooms and news organizations like the Associated Press saying, oh, we can't even question that. That would be bigoted. They live in their own freaking little bubble. They and the Seattle Times, I guarantee they'll come out with an endorsement against the initiative to protect girls' sports. I mean, of course, they let a guy, basically a great columnist, walk out the door because he wanted to publish like a column with a lukewarm opinion about it. And it's just they're living in a totally artificially created universe. And I really do think that the old media is the enemy of the American people as a result. They don't care what the American, they don't care to represent the American people. They represent their very ideologically driven newsrooms. All right, quick update on the effort to recall Seattle's socialist mayor. So you'll remember that a couple citizens had filed this recall effort over a couple things, public safety, you know, the whole failed response to the Bite of Seattle shooting, gun battles and the pimp and prostitute issue on Aurora, open air drug use, etc. So today was supposed to be the day that a judge would decide whether this recall had the legal merit required to move forward. But before that could happen, Melinda Jacobson and her husband Dale, who filed this recall petition, voluntarily decided to withdraw it. They said that they received some new information they needed to investigate. They're trying to seek legal counsel to help with this. So they asked a judge, hey, can we withdraw this? The judge granted it. So, you know, they could come back with a recall petition again against the mayor of Seattle. I don't know if they plan to do that. The mayor's office has threatened that they'll seek damages for attorney's fees if there's like multiple efforts from the same people to recall her that keep going nowhere. Our friend Jonathan Cho tried to catch up with Seattle's socialist mayor over the weekend to ask about the dismissal.
Hey, Mayor Wilson, how you doing?
Hey.
Mayor, I was just going to say congrats on surviving the recall attempt. What have you learned from this process and what are you going to do differently, Mayor?
Meh, meh.
Are there any lessons you learned from this recall process?
Just dragging her child. Nada. And you might be like, well, she's with her kid. Don't question her. But she's out in public with her kid, clearly at some sort of function where she's got her staff with her. So I think Jonathan's well within her right to be able to ask her about it. And she could have just said, yeah, no comment, I'm with my kid, we're taking off. Like, I just don't understand why she thinks silence toward the press, and she does this so often, somehow like is going to work for her. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll because I'm kind of two minds about this. There's this part of me that's like, no, I want voters to like get what they voted for good and hard. And like they need to experience 4 years of this deeply unqualified, unserious woman and her socialist ideology to really hit rock bottom. But then I'm also like, yeah, but that hurts all of us. That hurts the state. I don't know if there's any coming back from that. So I asked you guys in our subscriber poll, do you think it's better to recall Mayor Wilson or have voters experience 4 years of socialist policies? Nicole, recall our socialism. Recall our socialism.
I don't know if we want the whole 4 years, but I definitely think that if we're going to, I don't like throwing this recall thing out there all the time. And I think you have to make sure that it's a result of her policies. Mm-hmm. And as we've kind of discussed, some of that is coming from the previous mayor and right. Some of it is not her fault and she hasn't had a chance to fix yet. I think she could be on her way to fixing things more than she is. But I say we have to give it a little bit more time to be able to blame her.
So I understand that. I do think my only thought is if a socialist, because there's been this, you know, there's like New York City has a socialist mayor, now Seattle, possibly Los Angeles. I think if one of them falls flat on their face so hard and so quickly, I'm hoping that could undercut this sort of socialist movement of these right. Nepo baby, you know, rich kids just being elevated to these positions that they're not qualified for. So I like the recall effort. Let's see. Let's start on X with our subscribers today. Anna B says, I still say recall. Letting Seattle sit with 4 years of this isn't just a local civics lesson. People pass through that city whether they voted for it or not. And it is the economic engine of the state. And so as Seattle goes, so goes the state. Let's see. Fugitive Mama says, I like the recall because 4 more years of decay in Seattle hurts the entire region and the state, kind of to my point. Bully Mom, since I don't live in Seattle, let them live with what they chose. But I'm very sorry for the folks that didn't vote for her having to deal with this BS. Elise says, let them lie in the bed they made. Matt says, it's the same choice. If Katie gets recalled, it's not like Seattle will vote for a conservative. They'll just vote for a better socialist. Better in quotes. Let's stick with Katie and just see how deep this rabbit hole goes. You guys are very split on this. 55% say let them live with socialism. 45% say no, I think they should proceed with a recall. So we shall see what happens there. All right. We'll get to national news coming up next. First, a lot of people, I hear it all the time from folks saying, Brandy, I'm finally doing it. I'm finally leaving. I just got a couple messages like this on Patreon. You know, I moved to Arizona. I moved to Idaho. If you're at the early stages of thinking about selling your home, and maybe it's to move out of state or otherwise, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. He is working with a lot of people right now who are deciding to leave over the new income tax passed by Democrats in Olympia. And they say, look, it's not that I'm impacted by the millionaire's tax yet, but they see where it's going.
Many people believe, as you do, as do I, that it is going to be an income tax for everyone. And believe it or not, the vast majority of the people that I work with, they're actually not going to be impacted by the millionaire's tax. But what they are impacted in is just the cost of living that we are in. And they could be people who are my generation with families. They could be people who are getting ready to retire. And they just see the writing on the wall that it is very, very expensive to live here. They see where the future is headed and they are making the decision to eject now because this is not going to be the place for them to raise their family or the place for them to retire affordably.
Yeah, and if that sounds like you, you just got to get a head start, especially with so many homes going on the market right now. It all comes down to whether your listing stands out, whether your home stands out. Wes can help with both of those things. Fantastic marketing, listing boost concierge service coming in, getting it pre-inspected, getting it, you know, properly prepared for sale, whether it means cosmetic upgrades or some great staging. So reach out to Wes as early as possible. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, the Trump administration shutting down some driving schools that license CDL drivers, commercial driver's licenses, And this comes after, you know, all these investigations into illegal aliens being given CDLs, some deadly crashes. Some of them can't even speak English or read signs to know what they're supposed to be doing on the roadway. So this from the U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. So they are closing a bunch of CDLs, 100. So emergency removal of 110 commercial driver's license schools that they say are associated with more than 5,000 drivers who failed English language proficiency tests. So if this was happening at these schools on a routine basis, they're closing them on an emergency basis. It's the result of a 40-state investigation, and they're launching a nationwide audit of third-party CDL skills testers and state oversight of those testers. And then DHS is also involved. They've done some sweeps targeting training schools in terms of, you know, are there illegals there, et cetera. And the Department of Justice also involved, saying it's forming a joint task force called Crossroads of America to safeguard the nation's highway system and strengthen the security of our borders. Here's U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy.
You have to speak English to operate a commercial motor vehicle. I didn't create that rule. President Trump didn't create that rule. That rule has been in place for decades. We have schools that know the rule and still pass people through their school who can't speak the language. And so there's 110 of them through a data analysis that are the greatest offenders. As of today, those schools are shut down. We also have shut down 160 additional schools. These are schools that, in essence, certify that they are qualified to train truck drivers. However, they don't have adequate space to put a potential driver in a truck and have them go around the cones and do the turns. And they don't have space to even allow the truck driver to actually get behind the wheel and drive. So you have fraud throughout the school system.
Yeah. So that's what they're calling it, fraud. I mean, if you say that you're equipped to teach people how to drive a big rig and you don't even have space for them to drive a big rig and do training, sort of a red flag, right? They haven't released the full list of the emergency closures. We're going to wait for that list to see if any of them are right here in Washington State. I mean, we had an illegal alien who killed a young husband and father on the roads of Washington State. Of course, there was the issue with the illegal alien who killed people on the Florida Turnpike, who had a CDL from Washington State. This was an interesting exchange. So DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen, a reporter asked about, you know, why are you focusing so much attention on this for something that doesn't happen very often?
Are you saying 1% is okay? Because that 1% is what caused this right here. 1% is one too many. I said this in my remarks. Every single illegal that maims or kills an individual is 100% preventable. I'm trying to prevent every one of them. I don't care if it's a fraction of 1%. I'm coming after you. I'm removing you from the road because it should never take place. Every death at the hands of an illegal is one too many. So you make the percentage about 1%. Are you willing to take that 1% if it was your daughter?
No, I never got that from the media. It's like, oh, you know, only 1% of fatal accidents from big rigs are illegal aliens. It's like, okay, but that's 100, as Mark Wayne Mullen said, that's 100% preventable. You know, I mean, of people killed in the state of Washington, you know, you look at the State Patrol trooper Christopher Gadd, who was murdered by an illegal alien. You could say, oh, well, that's a one-off, right? Which it's not, but you could say it's a one-off. Okay, well, you tell Christopher Gadd's family that had that illegal alien been removed from the country when there was ample opportunity to remove him, you go try to tell his family that, oh, that's pretty rare, right? I'm sure that'll make them feel so much better. Media just lost its mind. All right, let's just do a fun one quick. Portland, at least the kids in Portland are going back to school. And to get them ready and get them motivated to start a new school year, the Portland Public School District posted a montage of messages from leaders and educators. There was politicians, business owners, the owner of the Trailblazers, a goalkeeper for the Timbers, and the video began with Dr. Poison Waters.
I'm here to wish you all a successful 2026-2027 school year and to thank all the amazing principals, teachers, and staff for your dedication to your students and their learning. While we can often get caught up in the hustle and bustle, it's so important to remember that together we rise with excellence and purpose.
I hate everyone and everybody. I mean, seriously, why? Hold a video of all these people from the community and they start with the drag queen. Anybody who says this isn't an effort at indoctrination, I mean, you are so deep into your little echo chamber or under a rock. I just don't understand it. There's literally no point. Dr. Poison Waters. Something tells me they're not a real doctor, but I don't know. You could prove me wrong. All right, let's get to comments. Nicole, hello. Join us. All right.
That video.
Why? You know, maybe I should start dressing in drag.
Get a little more attention?
Yeah. Okay. I think so. All right, on the school superintendent, Seattle superintendent blasting the union, Matthew Cook, teachers union gets the public support because of the continuing, we don't make enough narrative. He's a good man. Destroy the narrative with actual stats. Yeah, when you say they're making more than $120,000 a year for working 180 days a year, and then for a regular person, the vast majority of whom do not make that much and certainly work year round, then it starts to fall apart in their mind, right?
A lot. And the procrastinating until it was school time to start school. And
right.
It's just ridiculous, unacceptable, and it's an illegal thing to do.
It's illegal. Yeah, we should mention it's illegal for teachers to strike in Washington State, yet since they're buddy-buddy with all the Democrats and the judges and all these things, they're rarely held accountable for it.
Yeah, John Thomas says, for $5, teachers are the problem. They are either willing participants or complicit by their silence and the Marxist indoctrination of their students.
Yeah.
Most of them aren't silent.
Well, good for the 30% that voted against a strike. I know that there are still sane teachers, but again, I go back to, if you're voting, that means you're a member of the union. And so you shouldn't be a member of the union. Baron of Gray Matter, Seattle sees the sinking ship that is Seattle and Washington State. Oh, the Seattle Education Association sees the sinking ship that is Seattle and Washington State. They are getting, while the getting is good and Dems hold power, the kids aren't even part of the picture. Yeah, maybe they realize like, hey, budgets are, you know, shrinking and enrollment is sinking. And if we don't get a raise now, we're never going to get a raise. They don't need a raise. Good grief. All right, let's go to the Times. Ed Board hates parents. CPKP7VK, what's wrong with having access to a child's mental health records? Good question. Great question.
Yeah, because maybe you could help them with some of their issues.
Yeah, maybe as a parent, you know, you want to know if your kid is expressing suicidal ideation to their school counselor.
Right.
Or if your child wants their genitals removed. Maybe a good thing as a parent
possibly
to just kind of know about.
Right. Mr. Hamlet says, under the 14th Amendment's due process clause, if fit parents have a fundamental liberty interest to direct the care, custody, and upbringing of their children.
Yeah. Crystal Benson, all the people that hide children from parents should be charged with kidnapping. I agree, because it is kidnapping. Oh, not if they want to be a boy or a girl. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Controversy over the voter pamphlet. You want to start with Carissa Barr?
Yeah. So for $10 super chat, Brandy, help me understand this. If a sports physical is required, as it always has been, are doctors just lying or are the schools choosing to ignore the sports physicians that are turned in?
No, it's because...
Physical, sorry.
Yeah, it's because in Washington State, they allow boys to play against girls. So the WIA policy and the Washington State policy is you can play in the sport category that matches the gender you choose. So it wouldn't matter if, you know, girl... or boy took a physical and it says their biological sex, as we know is already on a lot of the forms, what is their biological sex? And if they say boy, that boy can still, by law and under the rules of the WIAA, participate in girls. So no lying is required.
Right. And at a minimum, it says if they're going through puberty, like appropriate rate or at
it talks about
time
menstruation.
Or whatever. It talks about all of that.
We've
so
seen
you don't
forms.
Even have to fill out M or F.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
It's crazy.
Because only girls menstruate. Doesn't matter if Dylan Mulvaney put tampons in his little purse. He wasn't menstruating. Shirley Lopez, it's easy for liars to outmaneuver those constrained by truth. I agree. That's why it's such a difficult enemy to combat, is they're willing to lie and we're just not willing to do so.
Right. Yeah. Lie and manipulate. It's a ethics thing for sure. Robert Parker says, any citizen can file an Unfair Campaign Act complaint with the PDC for lies and untruthful statements made by a candidate or initiative group.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. Necro Two Shoes, I'm very much surprised that the state government that colluded with the AG's office to pass an unconstitutional law would do such an underhanded and tyrannical tactic like this. Yeah. They're all
shocking.
Underhanded and tyrannical. All right, on the signature thief getting a deal, SLK, the one, says, such BS. How are our elections safe if they cannot call this election interference or something? Yeah, I mean, look, if this had been a right winger who assaulted someone and stole initiative forms
when they were doing the initiative for gay marriage, you think that they would have gotten a plea agreement? Let's be honest here.
I think we need to reevaluate what anger management classes consist of.
Right. What are you learning?
I think that needs to be an approved process.
Right.
That, like, we can know about, and not just some single, you know, therapist or whatever that like says, yeah, you have anger management, like, we should work on that.
Yeah. Like, and what? Don't punch women as a man, right? Like that. Do you need anger management to know not to punch a woman?
Because
collecting signatures.
I thought in the case of your attacker, she only had to go to one class, right?
Yeah, I think it was just one anger management class.
Give me a break.
Then she got off on it.
That's does nothing. Make it a punishment.
I know. Very Victoria says, how about a civics class instead of anger management? That might be good. It depends on who teaches the civics class.
Yeah. On Matt Culkin's and his latest Substack, John Thomas says, for $10, I don't know if it's because the WNBA is using the same build for their store as Coke, but they also prohibited Christian phrases, but allowed other religious texts and deliberate anti-trans or anti-Christian.
There was this video of, you know, how you could customize a Coke bottle, you know, and they wouldn't let you put certain things on there, which makes sense. There was people doing this little test with, you can order custom jerseys from teams like the Indiana Fever, and it would say, you could write like Allah is good or something, but you couldn't write like God is good. And they were trying all these different variations of phrases, and it would like reject anything that like would be pro-God or pro-women, Christian. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the Katie Wilson recall, milkman, everywhere you turn over a socialist, you find a bunch of money. Katie's parents are rich. Hassan is rich. Al-Sayed is rich. Head of the DSA has rich parents. Yeah, 100%.
Isn't it funny that they just hate capitalism?
Yeah. If you don't watch, there's a great show I'm watching on Paramount Plus called Lioness. Have you seen Lioness? No. It's like a, you know, just another great series from the guy who did Taylor Sheridan. Is that it? Yeah, Taylor Sheridan.
Yep.
And they're right now, it's like this, the spies are trying to figure out something about a Russian asset or whatever, and the Chinese are working against America. But they like go on these rants about socialism and communism, and this professor who's involved in spying against the United States, like very pro-communist, but he's got a beach house somewhere and he makes like a bunch of money. So it's just a really good show. It's like anti-woke.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, this generation coming up doesn't get it. They don't, like, history has been, I don't know, it's desensitized. They're just desensitized to it, and they don't get it. So I don't know. It's going to take Katie Wilson doing a whole 4 years for them to understand that it doesn't work.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, you've got to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They are looking out for your private property rights all year long. Also, of course, during the legislative session in Olympia. And then, you know, they've got some key legal cases right now where they're taking these issues to court. And, you know, on an individual basis, they can help you out. Just make sure that you're keeping up to date with all these changing rules and regulations. I mean, Seattle just passed new restrictions on landlords. Spokane is in the process of doing the same thing. And so you just need to have somebody in your back who's an expertise in this arena just to help you through the process. That is RHA, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. Go to rhawa.org. That's rhawa.org. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, Trump, he loves to change the names of things. So he signed an executive order last week to rename Lake Ontario to Lake America. And it's like, you know, 50% in America, 50% in Canada. I do have to agree, though. Why Lake Ontario if it's 50-50, you know? Right. So if you look at a map right now, Lake America. Which map service was this?
This is Google Maps.
So Google's already updated it?
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta love that.
Yep.
And Lake America.
Canada is part of North America, so I think it's fair to call it America.
That is true. It's not Lake United States.
No.
It's Lake America. Same with the Gulf of America, right? So the left is losing its mind over this. And as usual, Bill Maher has some really good points.
Trump is so mad at Canada, he renamed Lake Ontario, Lake America. Now I gotta buy a new globe again. It's like the fifth time it's happened. And liberals are very pissed at this. They say you can't just go around renaming things to suit your political agenda. Just ask any Latinx birthing person.
Yeah, don't really have a big problem with renaming things, only if Donald Trump does it. All right, that has been...
Just so you know, you can get an updated map that says Lake America, or no, sorry, Gulf of America at Hobby Lobby.
Of course, Hobby Lobby.
It's this very pretty map of the world, and it says Gulf of America.
Of course, Hobby Lobby would. I love that. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We do have a tiny bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers who support our work for $5 a month. If you'd like to join the ranks, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show.